rare at that time, and visions weren't widely known. But one day, Eli, whose eyes had grown so weak that he was unable to see, was lying down in his room. And God's lamp hadn't gone out yet, and Samuel was lying down in the Lord's temple where God's chest was. And the Lord called to Samuel, "I'm here," he said. And Samuel hurried to Eli and said, "I'm here. You called me?" "I didn't call you," Eli replied. "Go lie down." So he did. And again, the Lord called Samuel. So Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "I'm here. You called me." "I didn't call, my son," Eli replied. "Go and lie down." Now, Samuel didn't yet know the Lord, and the Lord's word hadn't yet been revealed to him. And a third time, the Lord called Samuel. And he got up and went to Eli and said, "I'm here. You called me." Then Eli realized that it was the Lord who was calling the boy. So Eli said to Samuel, "Go and lie down. If he calls you, say, 'Speak, Lord. Your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went and lay down where he'd been. Then the Lord came and stood there, calling just as before, "Samuel, Samuel." And Samuel said, "Speak, for your servant is listening." And the Lord said to Samuel, "I'm about to do something in Israel that will make the ears of all who hear it tingle. On that day, I will bring to pass against Eli everything that I said about his household, every last bit of it. And I told him that I would punish his family forever because of the wrongdoing he knew about, how his sons were cursing God, but he wouldn't stop them. And because of that, I swore about Eli's household that his family's wrongdoing will never be reconciled by sacrifice or by offering." Samuel lay there until morning and then opened the doors of the Lord's house. And Samuel was afraid to tell the vision to Eli. But Eli called Samuel, saying, "Samuel, my son." "I'm here," Samuel said. "What did God say to you?" Eli asked. "Don't hide anything from me. May God deal harshly with you, and worse still, if you hide from me a single word of everything God said to you." So Samuel told him everything and hid nothing from him. "He is the Lord," Eli said. "He will do as he pleases." So Samuel grew up, and the Lord was with him, not allowing any of his words to fall. And all Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, knew that Samuel was trustworthy as the Lord's prophet. And the Lord continued to appear at Shiloh because the Lord revealed to himself to Samuel at Shiloh through the Lord's own word. This is holy wisdom, holy word. Thanks be to God.
The second reading this morning is from the Gospel according to Luke, chapter 18. First, Jesus is telling a story. Jesus said to his disciples, "Two people went up to the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee, and the other a tax collector. Now the Pharisee stood and prayed about himself with these words. He said, 'God, I thank you that I'm not like everyone else. Crooks, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give a tenth of everything I receive.' But the tax collector stood at a distance. He wouldn't even lift his eyes to look toward heaven. Rather, he struck his chest and said, 'God, show mercy to me, a sinner.' I tell you, this person went down to his home justified rather than the Pharisee. All who lift themselves up will be brought low, and those who make themselves low will be lifted up." Then people were bringing babies to Jesus so that he would bless them. When the disciples saw this, they scolded the people. Then Jesus called them to him and said, "Allow the children to come to me. Don't forbid them, because God's kingdom belongs to people like these children. I assure you that whoever doesn't welcome God's kingdom like a child will never enter it. This is holy wisdom, holy word. Good morning. Yes. So first I have a question. How many people in this room, this is a real question, how many people in this room have ever done a trust fall? A trust fall. We got some hands. It's like a group thing and you, what is a trust fall? Can one of y'all explain it? Yeah, so you're standing and you have people behind you and you maybe close your eyes and cross your arms and you just fall back and people are supposed to catch you, right? So some of you have done this before. Where have you done it? Where have you done a trust fall? At your school? At your house? Who caught you? That he's trustworthy. For a while, when I think was in like elementary and middle school, it seemed like some group that I was a part of did trust fall like every 3 weeks. Like I just constantly was trust falling from like ages 8 to 12. And now I haven't done one for 20 years, so I don't really know if I actually trust anyone I've met since 1999. But honestly, I don't know how y'all feel. I always hated them. Someone in a group I was in got dropped once. And at this point, I don't even remember if it was me or if it was somebody else who got dropped on the ground. But the lesson I took was that if you got actually caught by the people supposed to catch you, then you were lucky. I know that it was supposed to like foster trust between all of us locked in the church basement together. But at the time, it seemed to me, and still kind of seems to me now, like it is obviously foolish to put yourself in the hands of someone you can't even see. So when I was younger, I thought this story about Samuel's call was really bonkers. For one thing, Samuel is a kid, right? I don't know if you know the background. Samuel was being raised in the temple. He was given to God by his mother. In thanks, because she had not had any children before him. So when he was a toddler, she took him to the temple at Shiloh, and he stayed there, and he grew up in the house of God, being raised by Eli, right? So when we get to this story where Samuel is sleeping in the temple in front of the Ark of the Covenant, he's in maybe in elementary school. He's very young, and he's been there since he can remember, and suddenly God is talking to him. And it seemed unreasonable to me that he would get up and follow a voice in the middle of the night. And it was also strange to me that God was talking to him at all, because it was always my understanding that God talks to grown-ups, because they'd be in a better position, I guess, to understand what God was saying. So because Samuel doesn't even know that it's God calling him until Eli explains it. Right, the text says that Samuel didn't know the word of the Lord yet. And so he keeps running into the only person who could possibly be calling him in the middle of the night. Now, when I was a kid, the only reason anyone would be yelling my name from another room was because I was in trouble. I don't know what Samuel's relationship with Eli was, right? Maybe he had a different reaction. Maybe he wasn't scared. Or maybe he was worried about Eli, who was aging at that time and couldn't see very well. So maybe he was scared that he needed help. I don't know. But I wonder if he was scared when this voice came out of nowhere and he just spoke into nothing. Speak. Your servant is listening. And what is the reward for this courage, this response to a disembodied voice calling his name? When Samuel finally gets God to say something back, God gives him this terrifying prophecy about punishment for the house of Eli, the man who has been raising him since he was a toddler. And then the next morning it says, Samuel was afraid to tell the vision to Eli. Like, no kidding, right? But Eli actually already knows that this is going to happen. He's gotten this prophecy previously from another man of God in the last chapter. So when Samuel brings this news to him, it's not actually news. It's not a revelation. The big thing that's happening is not that Samuel is the bearer of bad news to Eli. The big thing that's happening is that as a child, Samuel is being established as someone God speaks to even though he is a child, someone God uses to communicate, even to the high priest. Because Samuel is going to go on to become the preeminent prophet in all of Israel. He's going to anoint a king and then cancel that king and anoint another one. He's going to intercede for Israel before God when God is angry, right? Samuel is going to be a big deal. And this begins when he is small, because Samuel is God's. And that starts before Samuel is old enough to even know who it is that is speaking to him, when it's just a voice in the night and he's alone. I would guess that a lot of us have heard the story of Jesus blessing the children approximately 8 billion times. We have probably heard many a sermon reminding us of Jesus' love for the children, his welcoming of the children, how children were important to him. We have probably heard it explained that it was a fairly radical thing for Jesus to acknowledge the children and bless them in this way, considering the low status of children in this time and place. And the loving regard that Christ has for children in this story helps us to see God's regard for us from cradle to grave. That we don't have to grow up and get big to be someone God pays attention to. And all of this is really good and true. But what I've always wondered about is this ending phrase, that we are to welcome the kingdom of God as a child, right? Jesus says, whoever doesn't welcome God's kingdom like a child will never enter it. Another version you may have heard says, whoever does not receive God's kingdom like a little child will never enter into it. What does that mean? To welcome like a child. It's a difficult question because for adults, children often stop being people and become symbols, avatars for some virtue. They symbolize innocence or purity or hope or potential. And this is really bananas because I know every adult here can remember, because I can remember, at least one moment when they were a child and they were profoundly unkind. The total regard that Jesus shows children is not about them somehow being life-sized precious moments figurines. This is a thing that adults now want to do to children, to make them simple. But sometimes children are able to accept each other without prejudice, and sometimes they gang up on the new kid to make them miserable because they're different, right? Sometimes children are generous. Sometimes they're selfish. Sometimes they love purely and totally. Sometimes they are mean in really shocking ways. They are a lot like adults in this way. It strikes me, reading it this time, reading it besides the story from Samuel, and reading Luke's version of it, that perhaps the point is not about some character trait that all children have or embody and that adults should somehow learn to have too. Luke's version that we just heard of blessing the children, which I would prefer to call Jesus admonishes the adults, but I don't write the subheaders. This comes after a story that Jesus tells about two people in the temple, and a learned religious person thanks God for his virtuous life, which seemed to be legitimately virtuous. He was, in fact, doing a bunch of correct things. And another person, who is employed in a somewhat shady and exploitative industry, mourns and begs God for forgiveness. And it is the mourner who returns home justified, says Jesus, not the virtuous man who is well aware of his virtue. The lowly, the humble, those who lower themselves will be lifted up. It does not do us any good to rely on our own achievements. From here, we see Jesus affirm children for being children, admonishing the adults who imagined themselves better suited to come into the Lord's presence. So what's the difference? One big piece in the foundation of being a child, for better and for worse, is that you depend on someone bigger and stronger than you to give you the things that you need. And not only are you dependent in this basic way, you are dependent in this basic way, and it's fine. We spend a lot of our childhoods learning not to be children anymore. We learn to clean our own rooms. We learn to make our own lunches, and then to make our own money, and then to make our own decisions, and then to make our own lives, because we know that no one is going to provide these things for us. But when we were children, the fact is that someone did provide it. Someone provided all of it. Someone made lunch for us and helped us get dressed and took us where we needed to be. And if someone didn't, then everyone would agree that somebody should have. Because a child is to be provided for as a matter of course. And none of that makes a child any less themselves. As adults, I think that we sometimes, maybe even unconsciously, fear dependence. Having practiced being independent for so many years, we think the only things that can happen for us are the things that we make happen. We work to eat. We save to retire, if we're lucky. We are captains of our own fates. And this is the starkest difference between children and adults. Not that children are good and we are bad, or children are simple and we are complicated, but that we look to the strength of our own hands, and children take as a matter of course that good and necessary things will come to them that they did not procure themselves. Dinner comes. New clothes come. Comfort comes. That is simply how their lives are ordered. It's not some kind of referendum on their sufficiency as human beings. It is a fact of the world, like gravity. It just is. Perhaps children are able to be near to God just as adults can, or even better, because they have not yet learned to be suspicious of that encounter. Do you imagine that God's voice really sounded to Samuel just like Eli's? And yet Samuel doesn't convince himself that he was just hearing things. Children came to Jesus in the arms of their parents, and the example that Jesus pointed to was not the parents doing the carrying. It was the children being carried. Trust is a really loaded word. It seems like it's something that we're supposed to assent to intellectually. Trust but verify is a phrase you might have heard. And in that phrase, trust seems more like a tentative or a measured belief. But trust, most simply, is relating to something as a given that doesn't require any explaining. Like gravity. Like the fact that there are so many pounds per square inch of air pressure on us all the time because of the atmosphere. It just is what it is. And it's something that we can live inside of. I do think that children live inside that kind of trust, perhaps of their families or their teachers or their older siblings. I think that we all did for a time, but it doesn't take that much to lose it. A few years of aging or one good betrayal. And then it's hard to imagine ever having lived like that. Like closing your eyes and falling backwards, expecting a bunch of people to catch you. Like responding to a voice out of the darkness with "speak" instead of rolling over and going back to sleep. There always has been, and there always will be, a gap, a real gap, between what church is and what church should be or could be. But even so, I think that this is a place where we might practice that kind of trust, a trust that looks a lot like dependence but carries none of the shame. I think this might be a place where we can practice being trustworthy, providing and caring for, and practice trusting. Being cared for, being provided for, without the cringe of embarrassment that somehow we have failed to be self-sufficient. Because no one is, really. We weren't made to be self-sufficient. We were made to welcome the kingdom of heaven as a gift from nowhere, the same way that all good gifts come. May this be a place where we might practice this supremely foolish thing. This existential trust fall backward into the arms of God, our maker and our provider. This giving of ourselves to someone we can't even see. Responding to the distant voice in the night with, "Here I am." Amen.
When Bailey was talking about trust, I was in no shame. I was like, I'm about to play the marimba. To be able to come to a place and learn how to trust, or at least practice how to trust, what a gift. What a gift. And this is our exercise of trust, to cast up into our Creator's ears and in the ears of our community those things that we care about and those things that concern us and those things that we're grateful for and that we'd like to celebrate with others. What are the prayers of the people? Sharon.